Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on Edgewise today is B. Joseph Pine II. He's an author, speaker, and management advisor to Fortune 500 companies and startups alike. He is the co-author with James Gilmore of The Experience Economy, newly updated edition, and co-author of a new book with Kim Korn entitled Infinite Possibility. Joe, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity to spend this time with you.
Joe, in The Experience Economy, you walk through an evolutionary economic model that begins with commodities, rises up into goods, moves up into services, and then finally experiences.
Right.
The next step beyond that that you mention in the book is the ultimate model for businesses that you call transformations. Why don't you tell us about that?
To some degree, the first 8 chapters of the book are about what's happening now to get you to read the last 2 chapters, which are about what's coming.
Right.
It actually flowed out of the work of my first book, Mass Customization.
Mm-hmm.
Mass customizing a good automatically turned into a service. If you look at the classic economic distinctions between the two, goods are standardized, services are customized. Goods are inventoried after production, but services are delivered on demand whenever the customer says, this is exactly what I want. Goods are tangible and services intangible, but part and parcel of mass customization is the intangible service of helping customers figure out what it is that they want. If you mass customize a good, you're really in the service business of defining and designing and making and then delivering that exact good for that individual customer. And then if you customize a service, if you design a service that's so appropriate for a particular person, that's exactly the service that they need at this moment in time, then you can help it turn into a memorable event.
Yeah.
And that's where the notion of the experience economy came from.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
One of the reasons that we're shifting into the experience economy is commoditization. Goods and services are everywhere being commoditized. People want to buy them on the lowest possible price. You got the Amazons and the Walmart of the world that are commoditizing things so they could sell in higher volume and lower cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's commodities and experiences.
Yep. Experiences, you know, can be commoditized as well. In fact, experiences may be the easiest economic offering to commoditize because the second time you have an experience, it doesn't tend to be as good as the first. The third time, not as good as that. And then when you've got customers saying, been there, done that, then you know your experience is commoditized.
Hmm.
And you can think of theme restaurants as more on the commodity end of the scale, mm-hmm. without a heck of a lot of reason to go back 2, 3, 4 times.
Okay, now what's the difference?
Customization is the antidote to commoditization. Commoditization is this natural law of gravity that brings you down year after year, and customization shifts you up a level in this progression of economic value.
Got it.
Now, the next stage would be to customize an experience. When you design an experience that is now so appropriate for a particular person, that's exactly the experience that they need.
Right.
And create a life-transforming experience,
mm-hmm.
an experience that changes us in some way. So transformation is when you use experiences as the raw material to guide your customers to change.
Right. Joe, I'm reminded of one of the more obscure movies with Michael Douglas entitled The Game. Here you have almost the perfect cinematic display of what a transformational offering could be.
That's exactly right. I often recommend that people see that movie to understand what transformations truly could be.
Uh-huh.
The company in there is called CRS for Consumer Recreation Services, but it's not a service. It's definitely an experience and a result in a transformation of Michael Douglas's character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the book, you outline the 3 primary phases of the suggested transformational business offering. What are we talking about there?
The first one is diagnosis. You have to understand this particular customer, whether it's a consumer or a business, because experiences and transformations apply in B2B settings as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is this particular customer's aspiration? What do they aspire to become? And where are they today? Then understanding that gap between what they want to become and where they are, you can design a set of experiences to transform them, and that's the second stage.
Okay.
It's generally not one life-transforming experience. So many people can point to this particular event that changed their life.
Sure.
Generally, it's a series of them that you have to take the customer through that takes them from where they are to where they want to be to make that transformation happen.
Right.
Then the last phase is crucial, and that's follow-through.
And what happens there?
Follow-through is ensuring that the transformation takes hold. For example, if you want to be transformed from a smoker to a non-smoker,
right?
In fact, GlaxoSmithKline has wonderful products that help you do that. Nicoderm CQ patches or Nicorette gum. They did a study and found that only 25% of the people that buy their manufactured goods ever achieve that aspiration of quitting smoking. So they put in place a transformational program called Committed Quitters, an 8-week program based on a personal diagnosis of why you want to quit, what obstacles you encounter, when you most crave a cigarette, and so forth, and then personal interactions. Mm-hmm. And they found that people got a 50% greater likelihood of quitting, of achieving that aspiration. So transformations have to be sustained through time to really take hold, and that's why that third step is a crucial one.
You suggest in the book that colleges and universities are at least conceptually transformational offerings. Why do you feel that way?
I have two girls graduating this year from college, one in a physician assistant school, another in marketing and business. And I can tell you they have been transformed, not just from a professional standpoint of becoming people that will have careers, but from personal standpoints. They are different people now than they were 4 and 6 years ago when they first left high school.
Hmm.
So education is primarily a transformation business.
Definitely.
For example, business schools. People don't go back to business school for the ideas, the commodities of the business school environment. They don't go back for the books, the physical goods. They don't go back for homework analysis, the services. They don't go back just for the classroom experience.
Mm-hmm.
What they go back for is to be transformed,
right?
To have different skills, different capabilities, different knowledge, different career, different earning potential, to be a different person.
Mm-hmm.
One business school that recognized that was the London Business School, where the dean, John Quelch, made this fantastic statement to Fast Company magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in the education business. We're in the transformation business. We expect everyone who comes to the London Business School, whether it's for 3 days or 2 years, to be transformed by the experience. Every educator needs to have that same viewpoint, to understand that they're in the business of transforming those students under their care.
Absolutely. The primary audience for the experience economy seems to be companies and or consultants who need to develop and deliver meaningful experiences and transformational offerings to their clients and customers. But what about personal transformations?
Most of us still do undertake personal transformations. We still are not buying that from other people. But this whole progression of economic value is paying a fee for what once was free. We all used to be responsible for gathering our own crops and responsible for our own goods, making our clothes, making the tools that we use in our trade. We used to be responsible for services like cleaning those clothes or changing the oil in our cars. And more we turn those over to other people and gladly pay them.
Right.
Same thing with experiences.
Huh.
Now we gladly pay other people because they can do a heck of a lot better at it than we can ourselves. And same for our transformation.
All right. But is there some advice for people seeking to undertake their own personal transformations?
Yeah. Those same three steps. Diagnosis, set of experiences, follow through. You can do a personal diagnosis. What are my aspirations? Where am I today relative to those aspirations? You might even need to do a phase zero thing.
What does that mean?
What that means is, mm-hmm. I got this aspiration, but I can't possibly hope to achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then move on to another one.
Right.
Or go to an interim and then see if the first aspiration seems more achievable. Once you've got that, mm-hmm. what is the set of experiences you need to undergo? Now, recognize that there are many companies that can help you with those experiences, that can provide the right tools, the right places, the right activities that will help you along your path until you reach that aspiration, but your job is not done.
Right.
You do have to maintain that. You do have to endure through that transformation. There will be possibilities to come down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, can you give us an example?
I'll give you a personal example.
All right.
I had a long-time aspiration to become a single-digit handicap golfer. And the first time I told that to a golf pro, he sort of looked at me, and I think he was doing that phase zero thing.
Yeah.
Does this guy have the capability to get down to that level? Once he realized I did, or possibly could anyway, he started to suggest different things that he had never suggested before when he viewed it as, just give me money for my half-hour lesson.
Hmm.
Now he started talking about different things. Well, if you want to get down to that level, you got to understand course management. I got to go out in the course with you. I need you to practice 3 times a week. It was great for me.
Uh-huh.
When I moved to Minnesota, I got a different golf pro to help me with that same transformation goal.
Mm-hmm.
He took me through a set of things,
right.
And I finally achieved it. But
that's terrific.
I got to keep working at it. I can't just mm-hmm. rest and say, okay, I got it single digit. No, if I don't keep working at it, it's going to go away.
Okay. Now, I have a question for you. Does storytelling have a role in a transformational offering?
Yep, it does. Storytelling is a key way that you can engage people emotionally. The experience is all about engagement. Storytelling has a dramatic structure to it, a beginning, a middle, and end. It is about experiences. Often, those experiences can be life-transforming. We can hear a story that sparks something inside of us that makes us realize that the world is different than we saw it, that I am different than I saw myself or could be different than I saw myself. And there are absolutely people that have been transformed as a result.
That's amazing.
Storytelling is a key aspect of staging experiences,
right?
Particularly for the employees, because you have to have rituals and stories that hold up the principle that you're trying to create with this experience. Then you can get people to recognize that we're no longer in the service business. We are now in the experience business.
Okay, now let's take a look at your new book, Infinite Possibility.
Yeah.
In the book, you talk about the onrushing opportunities that high-speed internet-enabled technology and virtual user experiences can offer to targeted customers and clients. What role can these play in transformational offerings?
There are so many ways.
So can you talk about some of those?
Sure. You know, digital technology is exploding around us. People are migrating from reality to virtuality. They're spending more and more of their time in virtuality. One of the things that research shows is that the aspects that we take on in virtuality can actually affect us in reality. For example, if you go into a place like Second Life or World of Warcraft and you define an avatar that represents you in that world, that avatar, even though it's totally virtual, begins to affect your personal identity. Research has shown that if your avatar is taller, for example, if it's more beautiful, that can actually affect measures of your own self-esteem and how you view the world.
No kidding.
So it's one of the aspects of transformation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, do you have another example?
There are people that are afraid of flying, and they learn to fly virtually, whether through a simulator, through a virtual world, through an actual airplane that doesn't fly, but simulate what all this is going to be. All of those virtual simulations can help you get over that fear of flying and create a personal transformation. There's also a topic that's pretty hot now in education and other fields.
Right.
You see it increasingly in healthcare and other places, and that's gamification.
And what is that?
Gamification is applying gaming techniques and gaming stories to experiences.
Hmm.
One of the simplest examples is Ford has a new smart gauge dashboard that's totally virtual. There's no physical dials. Over on the right of the dashboard is a little thing they call the Echo Guide that has these leaves. If you drive in an eco-friendly manner, the leaves grow and prosper and get greener. But if you drive in a not-so-eco-friendly manner, they get browner and they wither and they die.
Hmm, right.
So at a glance, you see how you are doing. It is going to change you
one
way or another. I told one friend about that, and he said, oh, I can't wait to see how brown I can get them.
Right.
There's an elementary school in New York City called Quest to Learn that treats the entire year as a video game. You don't so much graduate as level up and gain new skills.
Right.
So gamification is only ever applied when transformation is involved. You don't need to gamify any regular experiences. You gamify when you want to nudge people or they want to be pushed in a direction that is going to achieve their aspirations or inside of corporations achieve corporate aspirations. But it's not just reality and virtuality, but all these other ways in between that you can use and create wonderful experiences using technology. All of those can be gamified when personal transformation gets involved.
Okay, another question. Transformations take time. How do you respond to the aggressive, deadline-oriented critics of transformation?
They so often do take time. Of course, they don't have to take time.
Right.
There will be pressure as we get more and more used to it. Companies will want to have it done more quickly. Their aspirations may become greater. They may want to have those transformations more often. But for the most part, they do take time because it's the person that makes the transformation. Even if a company is leading that direction, the person has to take the leap. And we can go back to the game in Michael Douglas, particularly about the leap he had to take in order to be transformed. All the company could do was set up the conditions under which he could take that leap, and he did.
Exactly. Now, just to wrap this up, can you offer any words of advice for new managers and middle managers?
It is a concept that all managers need to understand, because if you don't do anything, if you stay in the illusory safety of past practice and keep on doing the same things you've always done as a company, you will be commoditized. You need to shift up this progression of economic value to staging experiences and even guiding transformations for each one of your individual customers, and then you'll be economically rewarded.
We've been speaking to Joe Pine. He's the co-author of The Experience Economy, newly updated edition, and Infinite Possibility. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today on Edgewise.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity.
Have you attended an AMA webcast? These free one-hour programs deliver practical insight into the latest business issues as well as leadership and management challenges. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.